And our business commentator is Stuff's business editor, Rebecca Stevenson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the big push for Buy New Zealand Made is really showing some results. Certainly people showing interest, Rebecca.
Yeah, it's been quite phenomenal. And one thing that's been really kind of cheerful and heartening out of the lockdown, I guess, has been this real groundswell of support for New Zealand businesses. A company has set up a Buy NZ Made products Facebook page, and it now is getting close to 500,000 members. We've got a Shop Local campaign that's been launched. Neighbourly is promoting a Local Likes campaign for small business. And so it does feel like people are taking the opportunity now to support local, which is fantastic.
So the Facebook page, you know, to get that number of sign-ups so quickly, has that been just indicative of the mood out there, or have they been pretty clever in the way they've pushed it?
I think it's just the absolute hunger of Kiwi consumers to sort of do their bit and reach out and support businesses around them, which has been really amazing. I think one of the things, though, that it has really highlighted for me is kind of how a lot of businesses in New Zealand and do actually really miss having an online shopfront. And so this page, the success of it, I think, also shows us that there's that great desire from Kiwi consumers to buy and consume New Zealand products online, which is not currently being met by the businesses.
Some would have started down that path the last few weeks out of necessity. Is it probably a time where those who have had this as a small or zero part of their business offering really need to ramp it up?
They do really need to ramp it up. And I think, you know, Ryan Jennings from Buy NZ Made wrote a great piece last week pointing out sort of all the flaws in a lot of New Zealand businesses' approach to online. And he called it the inconvenient truth about buying New Zealand Made, with this great tagline: it's hard to find, it's hard to buy, and it costs too much. In terms of the last one, of New Zealand products costing too much, that's a more difficult proposition for Kiwi businesses to overcome in terms of, you know, cheap goods coming out of lower paid nations and those sorts of things. But in terms of making it easier to find the products, they can absolutely address that. And so I think that's a real opportunity for Kiwi businesses now. I think there's been concern in the past, as Ryan flagged, that Kiwi businesses didn't want to cut out their retailers, and they were also nervous about marketing straight to consumers. But I think this has shown them they cannot just rely on bricks and mortar stores. Even though Kiwi consumers are very loyal to bricks and mortar, it's always astonished me that bricks and mortar sales, compared to online, online's only been around 9% of New Zealand sales, and only really rising pretty incrementally compared to what we've been seeing globally. So there is a great amount of improvement that I think Kiwi retailers can make in online and pick up our business. You know, I'd love to shop more with New Zealand businesses online, but they really haven't been there for me.
This is also a generational consideration that they have to make, because while the overall number of online sales has been till now quite low, less than 10%, as you said, would have shot up more recently, it is different when you get down to younger shoppers.
Yeah, that's right. New Zealand Post had a really interesting report they put out last year, which really went down into some quite deep detail into the segments of online shopping. And they pulled out some data around younger people, which showed that the under 30s, you know, 40% of that age group are shopping online, which was a rise from 27% in 2017. And I think one of the things that is helping to push that as well is the rise of buy now, pay later, you know, Afterpay, lay-by, and those sort of new tools of acquiring consumer debt very easily online has also added to that as well.
That's a big jump, isn't it, in a couple of years, from 27% to 40%. You're coming close, not too far off, perhaps now already, at most goods purchased being online in that demographic.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, I'm obviously out of that demographic and a bit on the older side of that, but I've been doing most of my shopping online for a long time. Just for their convenience factor, it doesn't really bother me if I have to send things back or, you know, have some sort of delay in the postage, just because I don't really enjoy going into the shops and browsing that much anymore. I have small children, you know, I can't get rid of them on the weekends to go browsing. So for the convenience factor, you know, that's where people are going to be. And we do so many things online now, you know, we work online, you know, we're living, you know, our social lives a lot online too. It makes absolute sense that we're going to shop online as well.
I just want to be clear though, that 40% figure is the actually doing some shopping online. It's not it's not the total proportion of sales for that demographic. It's that they are most of them are shopping.
Yeah, that's right. Most of them are shopping online.
Well, let's look at what you need to do a little bit more to get the e-commerce working well. And again, this comes back to some of the criticisms from that article about Ryan Jennings. It's not just having it available. It's about making it something someone is prepared to go through right through to the end of the transaction with. It's the old three clicks rule, isn't it? It is the three clicks rule. If I haven't got where I want to go in three clicks, I'm out of there. And is there something similar when it comes to purchasing online? There are things you need to get right or people will just say, nah, too hard.
I think you have to make it as easy as possible to take their money and get that off them. You know, I do find and there's still quite a few barriers. You know, even with the retailers in New Zealand that have been online for quite a while, they don't make it easy for you to do things, you know, making you sign in every time, taking lots of data from me and wanting to know things about me is a barrier for me to buy things. You know, I always log in as a guest. You know, I don't really want you to spam me and market to me. So you need to make that process of selecting it and then buying it as seamless and quick as possible. If you throw barriers up in front of me in that purchase, chances are I'll move on. You know, so it is about making sure that you can still grasp that impulse buy like you would if someone was in your store and saw something that catches their eye.
That's so important. I'm the same as you. As soon as you start asking for my address, my email, my this, my that, my other, I'm out of there. My credit card you can have, providing you've got a decent banking facility, secure banking facility. But everything else, no, I'm tired of being tracked by all and sundry. So it really is a wise point to make. Just make it as simple. As simple as possible. The impulse buy. I did one last week, actually. I'll tell you in a few weeks' time what it was. It's still making me laugh.
Yes.
But again, it was the classic 5 minutes to get it at this price.
They do get you with the countdown clock.
There was a classic. But also, I had been thinking about the product. But the main thing was there was no barrier in the way. It's the same with subscription services. As soon as you start wanting all my details, I'm out of there. Did we also learn not just about the commercial and the big commercial operators, but a lot of small trading happening from the likes of Facebook groups during Level 3, which might encourage some whose businesses are either in big trouble or where they hadn't thought about whether they could do some of this stuff and perhaps quite a small business, might have made them seen that actually there is a market for it.
I think that's really true. And that's one of the things that's been quite astonishing, I think, for the small business people who have posted on that Facebook page. You know, I've seen post after post where the demand from the consumers has immediately outstripped what they can supply. And they're having to update their posts saying, sorry, we're sold out. I mean, if that doesn't tell you that people want your products, I don't know what will. And that's just from a group of 500,000 Kiwis, you know. Imagine if you could get in front of more people than that. So I think that's really true. You know, they do need to think about marketing online. You don't need necessarily to invest a big output in it. You know, there are people that have had successful drop shipping businesses and things like that through Facebook. I mean, I think these businesses have a great advantage over those kind of businesses because they have authentic stories. They can say where they come from. They're posting great photos, you know. I saw one of these handmade rocking horses and they just look beautiful. You can see where they're made. You can see the background of the people who make them. And that is really appealing to a consumer. People love to know the provenance of where they're buying something like that.
So this Facebook page looking very successful. You mentioned rocking horses. There's a huge range of New Zealand made goods on it. Has there been a bit of a debate over what New Zealand made is? Are we going to have a new iteration of greenwashing now that there is such a drive for buy local?
There was a big debate on that page when it was originally launched where there were businesses that were just New Zealand-owned businesses, but they were selling overseas manufactured products. It seems that the focus of the page has definitely switched. They were really smart. They actually consulted with the members of the page and said, what do you want to see on here? And it seems like it's definitely shifted now that it's very specific towards things that are actually made in New Zealand. And look, there is a debate around that as well, even if you're out, you know, big box shopping, you know, are you better to support a New Zealand big box retailer as opposed to another? I mean, we kind of saw this a little bit with Jacinda Ardern making comments about Uber drivers and Uber Eats. These are still Kiwis who are being employed. So I wouldn't say, you know, don't support those businesses. You know, I've got good friends who drive for Uber. So you've got to think about that as well. I mean, they do still employ Kiwis too.
Well, to our story coming in a moment, actually, about what is happening to some of these big businesses and big employers. The other point I was thinking of, we've been such enthusiastic users of Trade Me since its inception. And, you know, Trade Me was the first time many of us even contemplated doing something like, you know, looking something up online, buying it, and then, you know, as simple as it gets, going to pick the damn thing up. So we showed we could adapt when there was a convenience and a driver and a price point for it.
Yeah, I think the price point is key. We've kind of seen with Trade Me, it's become a little bit more professional in how it approaches it. You see a lot now, it's less of that kind of secondhand small trader thing, and it's kind of a bit more flooded with professional traders now.
Yes.
You've seen Facebook Marketplace has kind of swooped into that old space now. And Facebook are also introducing another new thing called Facebook Shops. So they're going to make it easier for small businesses to actually have their own sort of shop fronts on Facebook as well. So it's a really competitive space. So small businesses should definitely look at where they should be. I've seen other people promoting other platforms. You know, Instagram is also massive for e-commerce as well. Other groups have had success with Pinterest. It just depends on who you're trying to target. But the beauty with obviously those platforms is you can reach anyone, you know, not just Kiwis.
The other thing I'm thinking about is services and services at home, particularly, and this is because of something I've been looking to get done myself recently, is it Builder's Crack? That's when you post the job and people choose whether they want it or not. People often don't want to go and buy something and then come back and find someone to do it for them. We are time poor and we're looking for a resolution to our whole problem. And these kinds of websites at competitive, again, at competitive prices, perhaps just sole traders doing it, have got enormous potential.
Yeah, I think so. And it's nice that that happens. I mean, one of the things that we've kind of seen come through that's been useful for small businesses previously has been, you know, joining up with franchises and having that kind of franchise marketing push. But like you say, you know, with these different platforms now, small businesses can sort of get themselves seen, which is really great because, you know, the less overheads they have to pay for other things, obviously, the better for their back pocket.
Do you know my one frustration, though, will be all the optimizing happening on Google search now. I find it very hard and have to do a lot of keyword searching to find the one individual in my district who might do X, Y, or Z. You really are hammered by those who have clearly either optimized or paid to have someone help them optimize their presence on the pages.
Yeah, and look, there are loads of businesses who actually just do that as a service. You know, there's some quite successful New Zealand businesses who do that. I think Firefly is one of them. I may have their name slightly wrong, but they just teach businesses how to do SEO, for example. You know, so something like that is worth businesses looking at. You know, talk to some experts, drag in some other people who can help you. You don't need to necessarily buy it all up. You can just tweak the way you word things, and that will help to surface your business more. It's a little bit of magic, a little bit of science, and then some people obviously are pumping dollars at it too.
Now, everyone wants a good reputation and wants to look like they're doing good. You've got a bit of a beef this week, have you, with some of the big corporates?
Oh, this is, I know it's curmudgeonly of me, but it does sort of annoy me when I see big corporates who take a lot of money from their consumers, then giving that money back in other ways. So this week I saw a post that ANZ had made, which was very generous. They're giving $1 million in good sports grants to cricket and netball clubs that have been struggling post-COVID. But the thing that immediately struck me about the ANZ post was obviously they take huge profits out of New Zealand, which gets sent back across the Tasman. And I also saw a lot of comments under that post with ANZ customers who were saying, well, what about softball? Or what about hockey? Or what about this? Or what about that? So it shows, you know, it's a great thing for them to do. It gets them great profile. People feel good about the bank for that reason, I assume, they're consumers. But then there is the flip side, downside. People like me can look at it and go, well, maybe you should just keep that money with your customers. You know, charge your customers less. Do a good job. Let us talk about you because you're great, rather than sort of trying to buy our love, I guess.
Finally, we were talking about some of the big employers who are clearly struggling at the moment and cutting staff. We've heard the H&J Smith, goodness the history it's got, closing stores, and you know, quite a biggie, Smith City, in big trouble now, into sale and receivership. Does it have a future, do you think, Rebecca?
Well, these stores are kind of similar in some ways, and I don't want to offend the Dunedinites in any way by that, but, you know, they have been successful down south and in regional areas, but it's just been a real struggle for them. You know, Smith City has been struggling for a number of years. It's just so competitive in that big box market. They've tried to expand Smith City. They bought up some stores in Auckland, the Furniture City shops. But it just really hasn't worked for them. Their locations, they haven't been in central Auckland, and they've just really been being hammered by their bigger competitors. And I think H&J Smith are probably in a similar situation. You know, if you look at the stores that they're closing, just the population base, you know, in Te Anau and places like that, it's going to be a struggle for them to maintain any kind of presence, you know, just with so many other options for consumers now.
Also, those are tourist areas that are obviously affected, particularly Taunau and they're at Remarkables Park in Queenstown. I don't know how much of their business depends on tourism. It's probably a lot more local purchases, I imagine, but they are in places that are feeling the heat, that's for sure. And also, you know, if sales are down and the fixed costs are high, as they are for some of these businesses, they have to get moving, don't they?
They really do. You know, it's a tough time at the moment. You know, we're seeing these rolling, you know, store closures and job losses. And it's not just the H&J Smiths and the Smith Cities who are struggling with this. You know, we've seen Bunning announce that it's going to close stores in some of its smaller centres. You know, The Warehouse has said it's going to close its Burford store. So I think what we're kind of seeing is a little bit of a contraction of those stores in those slightly marginal centres, where they're closer to other bigger outlets that are sort of sucking things away from them. And so, you know, it's not just these guys that are struggling. I think we're going to see quite a lot of those smaller regional centres lose stores over time. And that's going to be a real problem, I think, in some ways, because we saw with The Warehouse and Farmers, you know, moving into those smaller towns, that those other retailers went. So then with those guys like The Warehouse perhaps pulling back, it does leave you wondering what's actually going to be left in some of those smaller towns.
And they're big employers, of course, in a small town in particular.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rebecca. Rebecca Stevenson, that's right. Is Stuff's National Business Editor.